Okay, we're going to switch gears now. And it is my pleasure to introduce our college financial aid specialist, Fred Amrine. Fred is a national expert and speaker on college financial aid, a financial advisor, and the developer of EFS Plus, a unique online software tool that enables families to evaluate their financial aid options and make better choices for college. We are thrilled to have Fred here today to demystify the college financial aid process for you and your parents, and to answer any pressing questions that you have up at the tables right after he finishes speaking. Can we give a big boot camp welcome for Fred Amrine? Woo! Give it up. Thank you.
Fred. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Everyone stay up, please. And parents, please get up. Everyone get up, please. I know everyone's complaining. One, thank you for coming. And it's a pleasure for me to be here today. I wanted to get you up a little bit just so you move around, sitting around. I know I'd be half asleep if I was half of you. And I'm not another old person telling you what to do, but hopefully that will work out. So now we can just move around a little bit, but I want you to sit down in order. So sophomore parents and students, please sit down. Okay, so we have a few of you. You have until the end of this year to make any financial decisions that won't impact your financial aid. That will happen this year. Junior parents and below, please sit down. So junior parents and below, this is your base financial year. Any decisions you make in your tax return or things like that will impact your financial aid positioning. Senior parents and their students, please sit down. 2015 was the tax year that you needed to use or will be used for your financial aid positioning. And we're going to talk about how that's going to work today. I'm just a little background on myself. I am a father of three daughters, three different children, all went to different schools for different reasons. Two changed schools and changed majors, and one was a Division I athlete in tennis. Okay? So I've kind of, outside of being an expert in this area, have lived the experience, which has been interesting. Now I have two weddings past me. I have one more wedding to go, so I have three daughters. So I am in the poorhouse also, so I know all of your parents are worried about this topic. But there's a thing you can do. There's ways to get to where you want to go, and that's hopefully what I'll present to you today, of getting through the process. Costs will be an important part, but because you're such talented students, you also have a great deal of opportunity in front of you. Because there's a lot of schools looking for students like yourself to make sure they maintain their academic presence. And that may be a problem for you. Because now you may be looking at these very competitive schools that you want to be with your intellectual partners. And there'll be schools who will really want you because it's going to raise them up. So you'll have choices, which is what your hard work has led you to here today. And that's very, very important. We're going to talk about persistence, and the presenters before us, okay, and the things you've seen are almost immediate. You're going to have to do these in the next year or two. What you have to look at is think of the decisions you're making today and how that will affect you when you're 25. So maybe let's turn it a different way. Say you're in seventh grade, and the teacher says the decisions you're making today, you have to pick your senior prom date. Could you do that? But that's what will happen to you. You're going to make decisions on a financial basis to figure out what your future looks like, and there's no way getting out of those things. So you're going to take on, many of you will take on some debt to get to the outcome that you're looking for. All right? So the speakers that have gone before me here today, which have been very inspirational, were the current or the near future. What I'm here speaking to you about is the future in front of you. That's quite a ways away for most of you. But those decisions can really hurt you. And we're seeing, you know, student debt at an alarming rate now. And hopefully the information you'll gather today will help you make better decisions. Okay? So we're going to talk about your future. There's a lot of changes. The senior class that has gone, as I, one of the other comments I wanted to make for you, is you've been kind of the guinea pigs. You're going to see the changes this year also. So you've lived through the SAT change, which was probably pretty difficult for many of you. There's a new change that's going to happen on the financial aid side that's called prior. It's also called the new FAFSA form. So there's a few things that are happening that are going to change both the financial aid process and the admission process. So the immediate change will be in the financial aid process because we're going to use a prior year. So typically, this will be the first year that's happened. It was always the preceding year that would be used for your financial aid. Why they call prior is in 2000, when you're applying for financial aid, the tax year that will be used is 2015. So that's why they call prior. So the information's 2 years old. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the award process. So we've gotten some comments about where the scholarships, and we get that a comment all the time. The schools are a business. If anything you get out of my conversation here today with you is that education, specifically a college education, is business. It's big business. And you have to realize that. And it's not that you could not do the work at the schools that you're applying to. It's just that they've had other people. It's supply and demand. Does that mean they're right or wrong? No. And you should not stop. You need to be persistent, okay? So we're going to go through the mist. And through this whole process, what you've learned here today and what you'll learn in the next few days and forever, it's an evolution. So you have to always focus on the outcome. Set your goals. You need to be looking at that all the time, okay? And it's an evolution. Enjoy the ride. Okay. So as I said, some of you will go through this process and it will be a straight line. It'll be an easy ride. Many of you will have a journey that's peaks and valleys, twists and turns that you need to deal with. And it won't always be perfect. But again, your persistence will work out. There's a famous golf saying, it's not how you arrive, but it's how you leave. So if you've been all over the course and now you get to that green and now you one putt, you may have done better than someone who got on the green on two shots and four putted. So remember, it's not how you always arrive, but how you leave. What's your outcome going to be? Learning, just by learning, you have to continually learn. Think of your life right now. Do you think if you were Steve Jobs sitting in these chairs, that he at your age understood what a cell phone was going to look like? No. But it wasn't like it happened today. We have such immediacy here that you need to understand there needs to be patience. It's a continual learning process that you keep on making things better. And that's hopefully going to make my life better when I'm old and gray and retired. I'm already gray, but even older, okay? So you're my future. And so that's what we have to encourage you to get there. But just remember, this is highly emotional. Now, there's a lot of emotions going through this process. It comes from a lot of places. It comes from your peers, your friends. It comes from your parents. It will come from your high school to pick the best school so they look better. It will come from the colleges for you to look at where do we go? We want you to come. They simplify the process as you go through this by saying you're sitting in those admissions office days. Is that you need to apply and we have plenty of financial aid. Well, that sounds really good. It sounds easy. But behind the scenes, the school is slicing and dicing you multiple ways. They want the best to come, and it may not be you. You just need to understand that. And it's not that you couldn't do the work, as I said before. It's just like they're creating a team every year. So they can't have all quarterbacks. They can't have all linemen. Or if they're creating a band, they can't have all altos and not have any sopranos. It's a supply and demand world. So you just need to recognize that and the emotional traction that you will get there. So again, be flexible in your decision making. Again, you have such opportunity in front of you because you're all talented students. That is the greatest gift that you have here and through this process. So just be aware of that. As I said before, embrace the evolution. Absolutely critical. So I'll give you an example. My oldest one wasn't sure what she wanted to do. She started in business. She ended up in school that we left at lunch and said, there's no way I'm going here. Because she decided after her first semester at the school she was at that she was going to be a speech pathologist that was nowhere on our radar screen as parents. So again, have flexibility. You may not know what you want to do. A few tips I would offer to you and your parents when you visit the schools, because it is harder for parents and you today. You don't have as much room to make mistakes. I'm a first-generation college graduate. okay? In my generation, you just needed a college degree. In your world, most of your careers will require postgraduate degrees, which means more money. But how do we get there? So that's an important part. To get there is a partnership. The partnership is you have to perform to the best of your ability, and you have to be happy. The second is your parents, because they're going to fund most of this, depending on the level that they will do, and they will help. And you won't realize the sacrifices they have made until you're a parent yourself. So appreciate that. I remember sitting there the first day after I had my first child, and I said to my mom, I'm the oldest of six. And I said, I can't believe you've done this six times. You need to have that experience. And the third piece is the school that you pick from. They are part of this. Now, parents too, you will be upset about this. They expect you, the students, to take control of the process. I think it's somewhat ridiculous, but it's part of the process that you'll have to understand, okay? So again, go with that, but realize all three pieces have to work to get to have a favorable outcome. Here's just a quick thing of the things that you will face or have faced in the process you're ahead. There's a lot of change going on. So we've had the SAT, ACT change. That still hasn't resolved itself. We don't know how the school is going to work that through yet, at least in my eyes. We have this change called prior. We're going to go in more detail in a few minutes. But that's going to be significant because it's going to change how the financial aid process works. It's going to change how the admission process works. And specifically, it's going to change how early decision works. There's a new group of schools. The schools are starting to splinter a little bit, called the Coalition. There's currently about 94 schools in it. I'm not sure how that's going to change the admission process. And then the states of California and Texas have their own kind of application process. If you're either looking into those states or live in those states, that process is also changing. And also there's some changes in the Common App. So all these things are changing around you that you need to be aware of and be ready for. So let's talk about prior. So I gave you a little hint how that time as we first came in, how that's going to change the landscape of the financial aid positioning. Some of you that will work to your benefit, some it may not. Some parents will have to do more work to understand how that's going to work. It starts, here's the biggest change. It starts on October 1st. The prior years, it would work, you would have to submit the FAFSA on January 1st. It will now be available on October 1st. So we've heard from some schools that now if you get your application in, you get your FAFSA in on October 1st, they'll be ready to give you acceptance and your financial award letter as early as November. In the past, that would not happen until March. So that's a big change because now what happens, some schools will be ready to give you that information. If you're doing early decision, that information wasn't available. So that's going to change the whole process. And it's probably going to take 2 or 3 years to even its way out. Okay? So the impact on our decision is there. It also will change admissions, how this is only going to work. Because now, you really only have about a month of time to negotiate with the schools. Now, if we have award letters in, say, November, you don't have to make your decision until May 1st. So there's a lot of changes that are happening around you that we're not sure how it's going to work out, but you, from a positioning standpoint, will have to understand. Here's a big thing that's out there. It's called enrollment management, and it's kind of a hidden office at the college campuses, but it's the key business area of the school. So when the schools come around, and you'll be sitting in this, when you're going to those visit your colleges, and you're sitting in the admissions office, and the admission person's there and saying, oh, you need to apply with plenty of financial aid, and you also hear the term knee blind, okay? From a business standpoint, they are the salespeople. Everything's great. You need to come here. That's the way they're presented it to you, okay? So that's an important part. What you have to also know is your EFC calculation. And there's two methodologies. There's the federal methodology. That number is the same at every school. And then there's a second process, the most common is called the CSS profile, which goes into more detail. So some schools, there's around 250 schools that use that secondary process. As I said in the very beginning of my conversation, is though you have opportunity in front of you. There's going to be a lot of schools looking for good students, which you all are, to make sure they maintain their academic presence. So here's the dilemma that many of you will face. You may put in that top-tier school. Depending on your financial position, you may qualify and may not qualify for financial aid. the top tier schools don't, a lot of them do not give merit-based scholarships. But now you go to that second tier school where they are looking for those attractive students, which you all are, and they may give you $15,000, $20,000 of free money, no matter what your financial aid position looks like. And then you may look at the state schools. And from a sticker price standpoint, that may look attractive. But you have to look at now graduation rates and retention rates, and is it a fit for you? If you've come from a small private school and now go to a state school in a classroom of 300 or 400 students, can you survive? Will you graduate on time? The best way to save money for parents is that you graduate in 4 years. So as I said, my first two schools changed majors, they took summer courses to get back on path, because typically when you go from one school to the other, you're gonna lose credits. Currently, about 35% of the students will transfer, and the national graduation rate after 4 years is less than 40%. That's alarming. So if you're now grading the schools, would they not be a failure? But that gets into the partnership part. There's multiple parties involved. It happens for a variety of reasons, financial being the top one of why that happens. So looking at affordability is a whole bunch of things. You know, what's it look like over 4 years? The schools will only give you information 1 year at a time. So you really need to take a look, and what's the financial impact of me having a brother and sister that's either in front of me or behind me? You need to look at this at a much longer time frame. And then the student debt. What can your parents afford? What will you need to burden? Again, many of you will require postgraduate degrees. So think of it as you're making decisions. You'll spend anywhere from $200,000 to maybe $400,000 or $500,000 to get to where you want to go. If you were to go into a bank and ask that, they would say probably not. Who watched Shark Tank? Anybody watch Shark Tank here? Great. I would tell everyone you should look at Shark Tank and see some of what business investors are doing with the ideas that you maybe are thinking about and what rigor they have to go through to get that money. But for you to get $50,000 in loans, it's not a problem. And the reason why it's not a problem is because school debt can't be forgiven through bankruptcy. So it's easy. The banks have you, or even the federal government. So you need to be careful, and that's why it's so easy to get the money. So this is where you need to be smarter. So one or two things. There's what's called the FAFSA process. Every parent, no matter what your financial aid position looks like, should fill out the FAFSA form. Two or three major reasons. One, the schools look at your ability to pay. Absolutely critical. So they can see the money, it'll help you. Second, to structure your debt the best way, by filling out the FAFSA form, your child will qualify for the federal direct loans. You need to know that, because if your child's gonna go and do postgraduate studies, you're better off taking those loans when you're an undergraduate. It kind of goes against the normal financial strategies that you normally look at, which is defer your debt as long as possible, because of student loans on the interest rate, on whose legal responsibility is, repayment and forgiveness, by completing the FAFSA form, no matter what your financial position looks like, you will qualify for those loans. So another reason why to do that. By knowing your numbers, you may not be required to do the CSS profile. So an upper income family, again, it depends on your schools you're looking at, you may not want to do that. Importance of a family timeline, two or three things there. One, if you have brothers and sisters, the schools will only give you information 1 year at a time. What you need to look at is, do I have a brother and sister either older or younger, and what impact will that have on my financial aid position? It may help me. I think there's one or two people that stopped by and said, I have twins behind me, or I have a brother and sister coming behind me. That's going to cut your EFC number, your financial aid position, in half, which may now allow you to get more financial aid in those outer years. Also, parents need to look at the timeline for their sake, because as that youngest child graduates, how old will you be when that youngest graduates? So what's your retirement look like? Unless your parents have all discussed with you that you're our future, and that when I've poured all my money into you, that you're gonna take care of me when I'm old. How many parents have had that discussion? So you're all ready to move in with them. Are you ready for them to move in with you? I don't think so. Okay. And I just talked about utilization of assets. It's absolutely critical. This is probably one of the most sophisticated things you look at when we compare it to other financial planning, and there's a significant lack of financial literacy across the board, from you yourself, from the parents, the schools, and financial planners. Because we have to look at a whole bunch of things. We look at saving plans like 529s and Coverdales. We have how are the financial aid process is going to interact with what your academic practice is going to be. We're going to be looking at, you know, how to structure the debt, and how does the structure of the debt impact my ability to repay it on the loan repayment options and loan forgiveness. So it's very, very complicated. So one myth out there that we're going to dispel a little bit is the EFC number. Everyone thinks the EFC number, and I apologize to the students here, many of you probably don't care about this, but you need to know some of it because it will impact your life going forward. But everyone thinks the EFC number is one number. It's actually four separate calculations. And you have the parents' income, the parents' assets, the students' income, students' assets. All of them are unique to the child that's being you're applying financial aid for. What people don't realize is the parents' side of the equation, so I get this question all the time, should I take everything out of my child's name? You have to know the parents' side of the equation and the schools your child's looking at before you can make that decision. So everyone says take everything out of your student's name. You have legal responsibilities there. You also have tax ramifications that you need to be aware of before you make that decision. One big mistake we see with parents is if you have a 529 plan, you have to report all the 529 money. So if you have multiple children, it's just not the one, but it's reported as a parent's asset. And the reason why they talk about the parents versus the child's numbers are weighted at 20% in the asset category. On the parent side, it's 5.6%, and there's an allowance based on how you file your taxes. So that's why everyone takes everything out. But again, you have to know your schools and know the parent side before you make that decision. So just don't take everything out of their name. It may not work. We'll see how that works in a second. So here it is. This is our software. This is our approach. So just indulge me here, because this is how we look at this. We look at it very different. I take this as a $100,000 to $250,000 investment in an 18-year-old. And that's the way we approach it. Not to be mean, but it's just the reality of the situation. So in this case, you can see the parent's EFC number is $39,000 there. If we were looking at all state schools, and in this case, this student has $20,000 in their name. In this case, if that child was looking at schools less than $39,000, it's not going to matter if we pull the assets out of the student's name. So knowing where you are and what your numbers are made up to be is absolutely critical on making decisions financially going forward. You see the difference there on the federal methodology, the FAFSA, that number will be the same no matter if I look at Harvard or UMass or whatever school, that $43,000 on the federal methodology will be the same at every school. When I move to the institutional methodology, that number will change. It's based on the school's internal numbers. They generate that number for themselves. So if you're completing an institutional methodology or the CSS profile, that number will vary school to school. So some school will look at your home equity. Some things will not be looked at. The three biggest differences between the two methodologies, on the federal methodology, your home equity, not included. Your retirement accounts, not included. And if you're a small family business owner with less than 100 employees, not included. On the profile side, all those things are looked at. So again, you'll hear different financial aid nights. They're the key things you need to know. So here's enrollment management. And this is absolutely critical that you understand this, because this is how the game gets played. This is behind the scenes. What people don't realize, depending on the school, they are slicing and dicing you. We know of a few schools that actually have 300 boxes. So as I said to you, you're sitting at admissions day, and they're saying, oh, you need to apply, and we have plenty of financial aid, and you're all excited. What you don't understand is behind the scenes, they're trying to build the perfect team. They want certain type of students from anywhere, and I heard that in various conversations here earlier, certain different resources they want to bring to the school. It could be as simple as what state you live in is why one student gets picked versus you. And again, it's not that you couldn't do the work. It's just they had to make certain selections for what they're trying to do. It's just like a business. We can't have all salespeople if we don't have anybody that can do the work. Okay? So take it from that perspective. What happens on the left-hand side is your admission strength. That's your SAT scores, that's your other activities, all the things that they've talked about prior to this today. So they're looking at your ability to get in and where you fit in the puzzle. So that's the horizontal line on the chart above. The black line is horizontal. So when you're looking at your list of schools, anything below that line is an academic reach. Okay? The blue dot is the student in this case. So in this case, the student's above the academic average. Looks attractive. What no one talks about is the vertical line. So this student has a slight financial reach. The vertical line, the average package of the school is $16,000. They need about 19. So they have a good chance of probably getting close to what they need to do. So this is what our tool does, but this is what happens in the process. What you'll hear, so again, people will talk about where's the scholarship money at and all that stuff. The schools have now discounted a lot. A lot of scholarships you can't find because it's discounting. They're trying to attract students like this. And what happens is they're giving that money away, depending on the type of school, up to that upper end. So the scholarships are not something that's you need to do an essay or it's there for you. It's kind of we're looking for certain types of students, and that will vary year to year, just like a business. And I think that's the other big problem that we see is that we make these generalities sometimes in this process. So you hear that Johnny got $15,000 at that school last year. Oh, well, Susie, she's so much smarter. We should get 20. Well, last year, Johnny, they were looking for specific students. Maybe he's going to go into nursing, and they were looking for male nurses versus I'm looking at nursing, but I'm a female. It was just last year they're trying to do that. Or their business school was short accountants, and he applied accounting, and they just gave more money trying to attract more accountants that year. Again, that's the business aspect of the scholarship myth that where's all the money, and really it will vary. Just like a business, it evolves. And I think that's one of the myths that hopefully you'll get out of this presentation today. But also, if we go further onto the right-hand side there, again, you hear you need to apply when you put in financial aid. Depending on what your financial aid position is, and you're just on that average line, the schools have a tendency to move back to the mean there. Okay, so they're going to average 16. So say we had need of $32,000 at this school. We're an academic, you know, able to get in, but the school comes back and only gives us 17. You need to be careful when you have this information that you can make better decisions because you're going to waste a lot of time to make those applications. You're going to waste money to apply. And even if you do get in, you probably won't have the money to go. So this gets into some of the background of what we're trying to do to help you make better decisions, okay? All right, so when you go through this value proposition, what we want to do is look past the sticker price. You know, we're comparing, you know, these private institutions to the state schools, and they look attractive. And you need to look past that, because if now I go to the state school, the graduation rate is much lower for a variety of reasons. And now I get into private school and I get nice scholarship money, but the graduation's much higher. It may have been cost effective to go to the more expensive school because now maybe I paid an extra $15,000 or $20,000 over the 4 years. That would have been the tuition I would have paid, but now I've lost a full year of employment. So that cost of going to the cheaper school may not have been cost effective. So you need to look at graduation rates as you go through this. Look at retention and transfer rates. As I said, the transfer rate's close to 35% at this point in time, depending on what study you look at. I think an important part, I know this is early, one of the things I would tell you to do is visit the career centers. It's okay if you don't know what you're doing or want to do. But go to the career centers when you visit your campuses for a variety of reasons. One, if you don't know what you want to do, what tests and services do they have to help you figure that out? Second, what type of co-op internship programs do they offer when you decide what you want to do? And the two or three careers that you are considering, what's their placement in that? How good are they in those type of areas? Because that's what you're doing. You're focusing on the outcome. And this also will help you understand. So as an example, as I said, my oldest one, she's a speech pathologist. Wasn't in our radar screen. Wasn't even our radar screen when she was in college. So Christmas of her freshman year. She was at a party, And someone said, oh, I'm a speech pathologist. And she got very interested. She took her spring break, shadowed 4 different people, and came back and said, this is what I want to do. So we about-faced, figured out what we had to do, and it worked out great for her. You need to do the same thing because most of you will require postgraduate degrees. So let me give the other example. My middle child is a math teacher. She works in the public school system. She did not get her master's because a lot of the government jobs in the school districts, there are union jobs. And if she had her master's, she's more expensive. So she was able to get in the public school system, and she had them pay for her master's, and now she raised the pay scale. So she was able to get in where if she was had her master's, she would have been at a higher pay scale that would have made it more difficult to get employed. So again, knowing the playing field can be very, very helpful to you. All right? Again, the schools only give you information 1 year at a time. That's what our tool helps you do to envision that. And then how you need to structure that. Again, we talked about different things. There's different settings. So as an example, my middle child, she's the math teacher. There's a loan forgiveness program for teachers in Title I teaching math and science. So you could take on that debt and that's going to be forgiven. There's loan forgiveness. So I go to graduate school. As an example, my oldest one got a full ride through the Department of Education for her speech pathology. She had certain limitations on where she had to work for the first 1 or 2 years. You can take on the debt, you just have to understand the rules to make you can pay it back the best way. Again, you're seeing 43 million students have it, and their lack of planning is going to cripple their lives. So here's why it's important. You need to know what. So when you go to the schools, they're going to go to the net price calculators. That's going to give you a 1 year picture of what it's going to pay or what you are going to pay. So why is this so critical? Why the 4 year? In this case that we have here in front of us, there's a second child going to come on board. And the decision to what school they selected was based on the gifting policy of that school. So when that child, second child came in, their financial aid or EFC positioning decreased by 50%. They qualified for more aid. They could see that. Was it a better value? Was it a better fit? And it'll be broken up into a few different areas. One, we have the free money, which is the gift money. We have the self-help, which is loans and work study. Then we have a financial gap. All the schools don't meet 100% of the need. And then they have what's called your EFC, is what the schools are going to expect you to pay based on your financial aid positioning. Okay? What's not in the conversation at all is your cash flow. As I said, financial is the highest reason for transfers. It's why doing a 4-year cash flow will help you envision how you need to structure your debt, the best way to utilize your assets. Again, we talked about the student taking on the debt. And even for your high net worth individuals here, okay, there's another reason why you may want to have the student take on the debt. It engages them in the process. It helps them understand the financial responsibilities of this process. There's a new term out there and a person I would tell you to look at. It's Adam Carroll. It's called Adam Speaks is the website. And he has a term called financial abstraction. And what that means, Apple and Disney both have been sued because of it. Your generation, you don't see money. We use credit cards and we have bracelets and we have Apple Pay. Okay? We don't see what we've made and take the cash in for most of us. We have Easy Pass. We don't know what that toll is going to cost us in most cases. This is the rule of financial abstraction. And the same thing's happening with student loan debt. We don't understand what we're actually paying. So I would tell you, take a look at that. It was a very interesting video there. Again, also by doing the cash flow, you'll see the use of your assets. How do we do this the best way? How does maybe a grandparent help the best way? And also identify your different financing options. Things like the financial aid officers can't tell you everything. And they also tell you you shouldn't get any help because everything's free. Well, they can't tell you, should I take a home equity loan versus a Parent PLUS loan? And what are the advantages or disadvantages? Because now that rolls into giving you personal financial advice. So again, be very careful where you get your information from. So the first thing is what you're going to pay. That's kind of important. The second is going to how you pay. So in this case here, this family had $25,000 saved in whatever vehicle it was, and they could afford $10,000 per year. This is on a planning basis. The school's on their list. And you can see the debt numbers are the red. That's going to be pretty expensive for that child to go there. It's going to use up their money. Let's see what happens. This student was a talented student like yourself. Applied to a school that had a college counselor help them decide which ones to go to. And they gave this child $19,000 of merit money per year. Now, this is what it looks like, and there's a few things there you need to see. The $19,000 goes out. We don't see the big jump because that second child comes in. The way the schools handle merit scholarships, it doesn't get stacked. Your $19,000 becomes part of your need met when that child, second child, comes on. So we had in the first part, we saw it where we had that big jump. Here, again, it's going to help you because the first 2 years, it's going to see a gigantic benefit. But this is what happens when you look at it over a four-year period. And now see how the numbers change here? This is the what and the how together. So this was an actual word letter that the student received. And now the $25,000 that was originally there is spread over 2 years. And now the red part is significantly less. And now this school becomes affordable for this family. Very different from the initial picture that we saw. Alrighty. I want to just tell you one thing about, we talked about this as you go through this process and the academic emotion you're going to go through and stress that you're going to go through, and now we have this financial stress that, can we pay for this all? I want to go back to the term of persistence. How many people are football fans? We're up here in New England, Tom Brady. So Tom Brady is the New England Patriot quarterback. He was drafted 199th in his draft class, so not great. There was actually six quarterbacks picked in front of him. He's probably one of the best all-time quarterbacks ever, especially when it comes to the pressure situations. But think of that. Here he is in today's time. His persistence, his effort has helped him get to where he was, yet a lot of smart people, very knowledgeable people, passed him by. He was almost 200th pick, and six people in his position, probably one of the most visible positions on the football field, there were six people in front of him that was picked. The same thing will happen through the admission process for you, in some cases for some of you. So don't get discouraged. Keep on going. Look at persistence. Get to where you want to go. There's multiple ways to skin this cat. Okay? Taking on the debt, you just need to be smarter. But you can't be blind either. I think sometimes we have a tendency to not look at the pictures, not be realistic. You need to be realistic as you go through this. How many of you play cards? Does anybody play cards? Good. It's similar to cards in the life that you're going to lead. Think if you've had your set of cards here and all you worried about is your hand, and you didn't look at the things around you as you went through the process to say, how is the strategy of things happening? They're the things you're learning here today. Of what's the strategy to get to where I want to go? And it may not always win or you may not always work out, but there's another game. There's another way to do that. I'm not saying to gamble here, but I am saying learn how to strategize. That's what you're here to do. You're learning how to do all these things. So, again, many of you will have to structure debt in various ways, and your parents will have to do that. It's often overlooked, though. What parents don't realize is that most of the debt, especially for undergraduate studies, will be either directly or indirectly related to you. So if we take a Parent PLUS loan, that's your responsibility from a legal standpoint. I take a home equity loan, that is the parent's liability also. If now your child decides to take a private loan, someone's going to have to co-sign for that. So that will also be indirectly or directly your responsibility. But also, by structuring the debt the right way, it can help you maximize your resources. We talked about a few people here. If you have a 529 plan, taking that debt as freshman year or in sophomore, junior, senior year, if you know they're going to go to graduate school, and use those resources graduate school because the interest rate is half for your undergraduate. And the student will have better loan repayment options. They will have better loan forgiveness options than you would in graduate school. Okay? Again, we talked about that, the legal responsibility and the interest rate. And then there's loan forgiveness programs out there. If you're headed in the science areas for nonprofit or government or education, the advantages for loan forgiveness are significant. If you're looking into the business world and private sector, it's going to be a little bit harder. So a lawyer is probably going to be a little bit harder. An accountant is going to be a little harder. An engineer. But now if you work for one of those type of organizations with that career, it's really based on your employer is what dictates the loan forgiveness programs. Okay, so again, you can may be able to find that way to do that the best way. So a few different common myths. One, need blind does not exist. That's my opinion. Behind the scenes, as I said, the schools are trying to fill the schools up. They are setting the numbers. So most of the schools that say they're need blind are schools that use a CSS profile. They tell the number of what it is. So that's an important part to realize. Again, they're trying to create the class they want. Assets in the student name, I talked about that a few minutes ago. Another myth. You need to understand that is legally the student's money. There's tax ramifications to pull that out, depending on what the capital gains may be. All right, so you have to look into a thing called kitty tax, which may then hurt you. And now what makes it worse is prior, you have to think that much further in advance as you go through this process. The impact of outside scholarships and outside resources, you need to be careful how you pay the bill. So outside scholarships, if you qualify for need-based aid, it may reduce your aid dollar for dollar. So I qualify for need-based aid, I'm now gonna take that. In most cases, the schools are pretty good about that. If you don't exceed your need, they'll usually let you keep it, but sometimes they will not. Be really careful, there's a lot of financial planners in the space. If someone comes back to you and says you need life insurance or annuity to maximize your financial repositioning, you need to be very, very careful that it's part of your entire financial plan. It may be a solution. In most cases, it's not. But be very, very careful there. They typically are making you pull money out of your assets, and they're going to make between 5 to 10% on that sale. So just be very careful if that money is worth it. In most cases, it's not. And I think also the student responsibility. So all of you are trying to, we all have the parents that we're trying to get away from, and I understand that. But with independence comes responsibility. So think of it this way. If you were buying a $50,000 car, and now next year you had to buy a $50,000 car, and you didn't get to trade the other one in, that's how expensive this is. So when you drop a class, you need to have good time management skills and good study habits to be successful here. So you have to take on some responsibilities. I talked at the very beginning about it being a partnership. It's not always easy, but you need to be careful here. And the proper use of 529 plans, because now the IRS system and the FAFSA system are linked, if you have grandparent 529 plans, that could hurt you. The schools haven't caught on to it yet, but now the way that flows through the IRS system, it could hurt you from a financial aid standpoint if it's not used in the right time frame. Also with the 529 plans, everyone thinks that's a pre-college event. You have to understand your state's 529 plan. I'm from Pennsylvania. We have a tax incentive to do that. So actually there are advantages to you still use the 529 plans when they're in school, when they're in college. So how do we get to where you want to go? I think you have to have an open discussion with your child. This is a hard one. It's understanding where you want to go. It's not a lecture, even though my children say I lecture them all the time. They're old now, but that's okay. But you have to understand what you're valuing. What's your outcome going to look like? What's my life look like? Having open discussions. One of the things I tell you to do is, you know, again, I'm an old person telling you what to do, but talk to your friends, your cousins who are just around you. I always tell my clients to go and make sure they look at both positive and negative. It could be an extra neighbor, could be the person down the street. But look around you. My dad had a saying, steal with your eyes. And that's by going and learning from the other people around you, okay? Understanding the career requirements, as I said earlier, and then making room for internships, I think that's an important part of the process now. Again, we talked about financial abstraction, but I think envision your life at age 25. How much money am I gonna make? Is it the career I'm gonna pick? As I talked about briefly about my oldest one, or my middle one, she's a math teacher. She transferred schools. She came to me and said, Dad, I think I'm going to be in there an extra semester. I said, well, you know, you're a teacher. You're going to graduate in December. All the jobs are hiring in the summer. You need to be graduating there. But, you know, we understand. She went back, reworked her schedule, and graduated on time and got the job in the school district she wanted to be in. So, again, you can always work it through and find what you need to do. going to close with one little story. The other day, as you can tell, I'm a big sports fan. They were asking Jack Nicklaus, so I don't know, how many people know who Jack Nicklaus is? Anyone know? Jack Nicklaus is kind of your Tiger Woods for me. He was the greatest golfer, he's still alive, in probably all time. And he was asked about the new young golfers up, Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy, and said they had just lost tournaments, or they were in the lead. And he talked about a story about him, the first U.S. Open. He was winning in 1960, winning the U.S. Open. And he got to about the, I think, 16th hole and fell apart. And he said, I learned by that experience. 2 years later, he was at the British Open. He had already won the U.S. Open, so he thought he knew how to win. He was on the 18th hole. He said, argued with his caddy and said, listen, I'm going to take this club. I'm going to use this one. The caddy said, no, use another one. He said, I'm going to do what I think I need to do. Didn't listen. Hit it over the green, bogeyed, and lost the tournament. That was 1962. So again, learning to learn to listen to people. But 10 years later, he had the best year ever. 1972, he won 7 tournaments in 1 year. So again, being persistent and listening and focusing on your outcome is the way you want to go. Just want to thank you all. Have a great day and good luck.
Give it up for Fran Amrine. They're standing for you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Good job.